Well, hello and welcome. I'm Ben Lauer alongside Angela Hillier, and we're here today to talk to you about one of the exciting new tools in the Kinect for Windows V2 SDK. It's a mouthful, try saying that three times fast. The tool's called Visual Gesture Builder, and so we've got a lot of content we want to try to get through.
Yes.
And the goal here is to really walk you through end-to-end how you would go and create a custom gesture using machine learning as provided by Gesture Builder.
Yes.
Great. So why don't we go ahead, and we've got a couple of slides here to kind of set the stage. Ben Lauer, you can get to me on Twitter, at Ben Lauer. I'm the developer community manager for Kinect for Windows. So that includes all kinds of the things like events, developer support, developer programs. So feel free to hit me up on Twitter if there's anything that we can do to help you with your Kinect app. So, Angela, I'll let you introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Angela. I'm a software engineer on the Kinect team. I work on both Kinect for Windows and the Xbox One sensor. Mainly, my main focus is the developer-facing tools such as Visual Gesture Builder, which you'll see today, Kinect Studio, KS Convert, KS Util, and VGB View.
Great, and I think we are gonna also show Kinect Studio, but I don't think we're gonna spend any time with the other three tools. Is that right?
We might hit KS Convert
if we have time.
If we do a raw recording.
All right. So. All right. Cool. Yeah. So, our overview for what we're gonna go through today. Again, we're gonna break this into two parts. So, part one, think of this as just the introduction, creating custom gestures. We're gonna talk about, you know, there's two approaches to custom gesture detection. There's a heuristic approach versus machine learning. And Angela, I'm really going to rely on your deep expertise here to kind of talk us through the sort of the trade-offs of these approaches.
Yeah.
But then we're going to get in. We're going to show Kinect Studio. We're going to show how that can be used to record everything that the sensor is seeing and hearing and play that back. And then those clips that we're basically generating, we'll show then how to get those into VGB and how to start tagging those to take advantage of the machine learning approach to gestures.
Yes.
Great.
All right.
So,
begin?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, creating a custom gesture. So, traditional approach has been heuristics. That's basically where you are in charge of coding the gesture. So if you have a punch gesture, you will be coding all of the thresholds involved in determining if the arm is moving forward, if the hand is closed. This is great if you are a highly skilled developer and really solid in your code and have a really great understanding of the human body. For the vast majority of us, we don't have the expertise to do this properly, and so we actually rely on machine learning. Machine learning, the algorithms are designed so that they can look at the data that you're given via clips, which is what we're going to be recording, and from it, it learns. You end up just tagging what you want it to think of as positive or negative samples, and the more data it gets, usually the better it becomes at detecting whether a gesture is happening or not. It's also better than heuristics in that you can, if there's an environment issue, like the Kinect sensor is too high or too low in someone's house, with machine learning, you just record a clip that has the sensor higher or lower and then feed it to the ML to learn. In the coding approach, you actually have to take that all into account, and pretty fast your little algorithm for detecting a simple gesture gets blown out of the water, and it becomes really difficult to maintain. So the machine learning is usually a really good approach if you don't want to maintain a large body of code. However, it does come with its cons, is that now you have a large body of clips to maintain, which is, some of the clips can be pretty large. You might have anywhere from hundreds to thousands of clips that you need to store, and you need to tag. And tagging can also be expensive. The benefit of tagging is that you don't need an engineer to do it. You can go and get, you know, someone who, a manual tester even, to come in and like go through clips and tag and do some quality assurance.
But it also, I mean, it sounds like aside from requiring an engineer, it sounds like that the machine learning approach has the big advantage of just not being as brittle. Like the way, you know, just describing, hey, if you move the height of the sensor,
yeah.
Or I would assume too, like maybe if somebody's slightly different size and the skeleton is
yes.
a different size, you're taking that into account, and the code just seems like it could get very brittle very quickly.
Yeah, being able to code a complex gesture with heuristics robustly is really difficult, and being able to achieve like a high level of confidence with that is even harder. Machine learning, the difficulty with it is not getting it to recognize. Actually, you can get a pretty fast recognition, like 80%, you know, recognition rate with only like a few clips for a lot of gestures. But the difficulty with most ML tech is that is chasing the long tail, is what it's called. So it's getting past that 80% and narrowing it down and finding, you know, the perfect fit. It's really hard to get the 100% accuracy. Yeah. But you really have the same thing with heuristics as well.
Yeah, okay.
Really hard, so.
Cool.
All right, we will move on. So in order to train our gestures, we're going to have clips to do so. We're going to show you an example of how to create clips with Kinect Studio.
Okay.
And Ben is going to be our...
I get to be the lovely model here.
Yeah, so what we're going to do here is we're going to open up Kinect Studio. And we've got Ben demoing. Now there's two different types of clips that you can record. We'll switch to our record tab here. And we're gonna go ahead and connect to the service. So we see Ben back here. By default, you see the basic streams in Kinect Studio. This includes our body, our depth, and our streams. Those are the minimum that you're going to need in order to train with Visual Gesture Builder.
So Gesture Builder, right, it only is using the skeleton or the body joints to work its magic, is that right?
Yes, that's correct. So the reason
you're telling me I can't use audio and say detect a like not, clap or something like
now.
That.
Not now. So okay. I mean, I think the goal is in the future that we include more streams that it can use, like face detection, you know, combined with gestures, voice combined with gestures. That's definitely a path that we want to go
okay.
on.
But for now, but it's the 25
now,
skeletal
yep,
joints.
It's your 25 joints in your body. And in order to get those joints, you need to have depth and IR. We're just going to do a quick little demo of how to record a basic stream. So everything we need right now is checked. I'm going to actually uncheck color. I do that because VGB doesn't use color, and color more than doubles the size of your files.
Yeah.
So just get rid of it if you don't need it.
Lots of file sizes there.
Yeah, so
space requirements for color.
So we're going to do a basic recording here. Just press the record button. Ben's going to move around for us. All right.
Do some 70s dance
off
here.
We'll stop the record button, and now we're in. We're automatically switched to play, which is a setting in your file options. You can, by default, it will automatically open the file for play. Here's our file name, just in case you need to find it later. And we're going to press the play button. So what happens here is it's playing back the file, and you see the skeleton being generated. What is actually happening is we're not playing back the actual body frame that was recorded in the clip. Kinect will regenerate the skeleton for you. If you want to check the actual skeleton, then you need to disconnect the sensor. Now when you play back, the body that you actually recorded should play back. Let's stop that.
Do you need to reconnect, or is it?
Let's see. Let's open, I assume it was my last clip. All right, we'll stop that. Hopefully we'll cut this from the video.
We should mention to everybody who's watching that we're still in pre-release. We have a public preview that's out there. So we may be hitting one of the bugs that we still were working to clean up.
Yeah, and I'm not quite sure which ones are enabled for view or not. You have a different UI than I do.
I think just click on the connect button, and then if you go and open the clip, we should be able to view it.
And the clip's still open. We will close it back up. And then reopen it from the...
Actually, these are old clips at the bottom. I think the newest one's at the top.
Okay, let's see if this is the one we wanted. No, that's a
different one altogether.
All right, so that's the difficulty, remembering what it's actually called. You can, in your file settings, go in and change your clip repository. So this is where all the clips are going to be located right now, is C clips. We can browse and find a different file. But that's the basics. I do want to show one other thing, though, before we go on. And that is how to record a raw recording. This is a little more advanced for recording, but it's a very common scenario when you're going to train gestures, is that you actually want the raw data. Why you want that is because if Kinect happens to change some of our underlying algorithms and generating depth or skeleton, your skeleton data might actually become invalid, and you need to be able to regenerate that with the newest like version of depth.
Right.
And how you do that is we have another tool called KS Convert, which will do that for you. It will take an old clip and update it to the newest format. But it can't do it unless you record the raw. So
does raw take up more file size?
Yes.
Or
yeah, okay. So raw is similar to color, where it's gonna like, you know, tack on another third, you know, to the size of your file.
Okay.
What I typically do is I'll record raw first, and then I'll convert it into processed, because VGB does require the processed clip in order to tag and visualize. But I take the raw clips, put it in a folder somewhere, and shelve them until,
yeah,
you know, one day in the far distant future where I might need them again. If you're working on a project that's mainly just for your personal use, you don't need to go to that extent. But if you really want to create a library of gestures that are going to live on for years, then you need to record raw.
Okay.
So let's show real quick at least how to do that. So you're going to go to your settings, and in settings, you scroll way down to the bottom. If we can get this to scroll. And there's an advanced stream display option that you want to click. Now we can go back here to record. We're going to go ahead and show all of them by clicking this I button. And within it, we should see this new stream appear, which is the NUI RAW IR 11-bit stream. What we're going to do is we're going to clear all of the selected streams right now, because you can't record both RAW and processed at the same time. So what we'll do is just click that we want to record the RAW IR stream. Mm.
Now, can I also record color along with,
yes,
the raw IR?
Yeah, color is kind of a separate thing where it's, yeah, not regenerated. So the streams that are generated from raw are your depth and your IR, and the body itself. But except body really comes from depth and IR, so
okay,
we've got to get those first. But
so if I wanted to make the investment in these clips really having a long life, I would just record raw IR and then the uncompressed color, is that, and maybe audio as well?
So if you're creating something like, let's say you're creating an application that does both gestures and does stuff with like identity or face that needs the color, then yes, you should record color alongside. If you don't plan on using a technology that requires color, then you really don't want to waste that extra bandwidth and storage,
yeah,
recording it.
Okay.
There is an option, like I said, I've mentioned KS Convert. There is an option in KS Convert that if you did happen to record color, it has an option for stripping it. So you can remove color from the file and shrink your files that way.
Nice. Okay.
And there is also, I think there's files for compressing those as well. Again, if you're going to store the RAW, like once you've converted it, you can archive it and it'll shrink the size for you.
Okay.
But nothing's quite as small as the processed result. So, all right, so now that we've done some basic recordings, or we can try recording a RAW real quick. So go ahead
and
move around. Yeah, you can jump up and down. Okay. And we're done.
All right.
And it'll go here. Now, by default, it's actually turned off. So in order to see your RAW, you need to select it and turn it on. So now when we play it back, we should see everything. It looks just like the processed clip. We see the skeleton being regenerated, but we're actually playing back RAW. So that goes through the sensor. It generates both depth, generates IR, and your body for you. So now that we're all done, Let's actually make a note of who he is. We're going to go find that file. Which one is it?
No, it'll just be the most recent recorded clip.
Should be. And also it's an XRF clip. So ZEF clips are your process clips, and XRF clips are your RAW formats. So if we can find the XRF file. There we go. So this is our RAW clip. What we're going to do is we're going to rename it because it's kind of a crappy name. And we're going to call it sample clip for right now. Now what we're going to demonstrate, though, it's open, which is a good habit
Connect
to do
Studio
is
really
close
has it,
Connect Studio.
Has a lock on that file.
Yes, so yeah. Connect Studio by default will open your files for basically read and write access.
Okay.
So, which makes it difficult when you end up trying to open the file in VGB too, there might be a conflict. So you need to make sure to close your file before you end up using it in VGB. So now that we've closed the file, we should be able to rename it. Let's see, rename. All right. And what we want to do is we want to use, where's my command tool? Oh, did it get closed?
Oh, I think it fell off the screen there, yeah.
Yeah. All right, we'll just open another one.
Window.
Yeah. So we're going to open a command window. We're going to go to...
So our SDK, for anybody watching, gets installed to program files, and then Microsoft SDKs, and then there's a folder there called Connect. And I think right now we install in a folder called main v2.
Yes. And under that, there's a tools folder, and within that, all of the Connect tools that you need for the VGB stuff that we're showing today is actually under the Connect Studio folder. So you find that, and like if we list them all out, there's a whole bunch of little tools that you can use and files at your command. The tool that we're going to demonstrate right now is actually called KS Convert, and this is the tool. It only has command line options, but what it can do is it can convert your RAW to a processed recording or update an existing file to the new to the latest format. We're going to just show some of its other things. Here's all of the options it can do. Like I said, it's got the options for archiving and unarchiving files, for stripping the color off of a file to shrink it down, for basically including or excluding certain streams. The ones we're going to use right now is just the basic source and destination, and we're going to convert that raw clip that we just created, which was at C clips sample clip.zef, and we're going to convert it into a processed clip. Now, when you are creating, you want to do XRF to XCF. It can do both ways. If you have a process clip, it will actually update to the latest skeleton if you run a ZEF to a ZEF. If you do XRF to a ZEF, it'll update both your depth and your skeleton.
Okay.
So we're going to go ahead and do that. It started, you see little progress dots, which indicates the conversion. It's creating basically your processed depth and IR and your body streams.
Is there a rule of thumb for how long this should take based on the file length?
So what I've found is it's usually about double the time that it took to record it.
So if I have a 10-second clip, 20 seconds to convert roughly.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is like once you get into the hundreds of clips and thousands of clips, I mean, it can take overnight, some people a week to it's not something you want to do all the time. So
yeah.
I do it initially, like the very first time I record, I'll usually record about 10 clips at a time. I'll run them through the conversion. I'll tag them. you know, and then store them as appropriate. And then it's rare that you have to run this again.
Yeah.
But again, it's mainly like major new upgrades in
but
the
for,
SDK.
For anybody who's watching and you're just sort of putting your toe in the water called VGB, I don't think they need to go through all the raw right now. I mean, for example, when I was playing around with this a couple weekends ago at a hackathon, we didn't go through the raw process.
Yeah.
We just sort of recorded, and we wanted to just sort of be prototyping our gesture as quickly as we could.
If you're prototyping and the intent is to not use those clips as ground truth later, then that's great. If you're prototyping with the intent of preserving and using that data going forward, then you want to, you know, start out with raw.
Yep.
But yeah, definitely there's many times where I just, you know, sit down, create a few processed recordings and skip this whole step.
Right.
But yeah, long term, if you want to ship something, raw's the way to go. All right, so I think we're done with the recording clips section.
Cool.
Let's see what's next.
Click on the, there we go.
Thing. Okay, and that goes over the different stream types. Like you mentioned, we do now have audio support. Color is a lot larger than the other streams. The body index and the body frame are purple here. Like Ben had, you know, like we what we had demonstrated is when you're connected, you're not actually playing back the recorded streams. So you have to be disconnected and load the file and mark those as playback, and then you'll actually see the recorded streams. And we will see those streams when we load them, the clips in VGB as well. Just so you know, like if you don't, you do need to double check that your file has the body frame recorded. VGB cannot use a file that does not have a body frame.
Okay.
So, okay, next step. I think we went through recording and playback all in one. So now we get to start into Visual Gesture Builder, which is the real beast. And for that, we're actually going to unplug our Kinect. And we've got a sample, some sample clips already, since the studio isn't quite set up for recording the gestures that we want to do. Although what I'm going to do here is I'm going to create a new project and solution and just go step by step and show you how everything's done. Let's go ahead and close Kinect Studio, and we will open Visual Gesture Builder. So, hello. Why is it off center?
Oh, it looks like the... Maybe we'll just fix that here quickly. Sorry about this. I think we're running into a resolution issue with our... Oh, I just launched it again. That's not what I wanted to do. Oh, of course I can't resize here. Let's try this. One more little Windows trick. There we go.
Okay. Good. So when you first start up Visual Gesture Builder, it's a pretty big blank slate, and there's not a lot of helpful information here. VGB does have a learning curve, but that's why we're here, to help you get over that. In order to start, in order to do anything, you actually have to create a solution first. So you go to File, New Solution. We're just going to go ahead and put it in a new folder that we'll just call VGB. And then within that, I'm going to actually create a folder that's named the same as my project, which we're going to do a seated gesture, which is a very basic gesture and pretty easy to train with very few clips. And also easy to tag, so it's a great starting one to try. And
so
we'll name the solution.
You're creating a seeded solution inside the seeded folder.
Yeah, and so you know, the folder can be named whatever you want, wherever you want. The collection, which is the solution, can also be named whatever you want. The solution is going to be a collection of multiple gestures. What we are going to do is only a single gesture at this time, so they're actually going to be named the same. But I could name it sit and stand, and I could do a sit gesture and a stand gesture.
Okay.
Right now, I'm only planning on doing a seated gesture, so I'm actually going to name but the project and the solution the same thing. Let's see, and for some reason, seated. Why isn't
it? Oh, you were right clicking there on the bottom right corner of the surface. Just, you can also just touch there.
Okay.
It's a touch screen.
I forget. All right. Yeah, one day that'll help with tagging. So, again, if you're new to BGB, probably the best way to learn it is to use the wizard to create your projects. So the wizard is really helpful in explaining various things about the technology and what you need to know about gesture creation. So you get this nice little welcome page telling you all about it. We're going to select next. It says, okay, what would you like the base name of your gesture to be? Now it's asking for base because depending on your gesture, it might append a left or a right to it if it's a sided gesture, which we'll get to later. I want it to be called seated, so we'll just go there, say next. Now it's going to ask about what joints are going to be involved in this gesture. So there's information about like examples that, okay, if you say yes, then you want the entire body. If you say no, this is specifically asking me if I want joints in the lower body, which are below the hips, so my leg joints. I'm doing a seated gesture, and the bend of the leg actually matters, so I will say yes that I want the full body. Hand state. So you have the option to include the three different hand states, open, close, lasso, during training. This isn't anything we need to worry about for the seated gesture. However, a type of gesture that you might want to do this for is if you're training a punch gesture versus a push gesture. The punch and push are pretty much identical in the motion, and the only thing that would differentiate them is the hand state. Mm-hmm. So in that one, for push, you need it open, and for punch, you need it closed. So I would say yes in that situation. This situation, I don't care about hand state at all, so I'm gonna say no. Now what you get is a joint selection screen where you can, or we call it the training mask, where you can look at which joints and you can narrow them down. So again, where I didn't care about hand state, I also don't care about what the arms are doing for the user. If I'm sitting and standing, I don't care if the user has their arms up or down or sideways or, you know, waving them around. Really, the portion of the body I care about is the hip region, mm-hmm. and how the legs bend. If you decide to do something different, like the full body, what you're going to have to do is then train out different arm states. So if you initially train a gesture that in all of the seated clips that you feed it have the arms down, mm-hmm. it's actually going to be watching for the user's arms to be down. So then if you encounter a different user who has their arms out when they sit, your confidence is either going to be really low or the gesture might not fire at all. So removing, you know, joints that really don't matter to the gesture is a great idea. It also actually shortens your training time, reduces those classifiers, and gives you more accurate results down the line.
That makes sense, yeah.
So the next question is body side. So that's the left-right sided gesture that I was talking about. Again, the sit and stand, it's not side specific. However, if I were to do a punch gesture, I might want to know that it's a right punch or a left punch. And in that case, I would say yes. And I would actually train two different gestures, a punch right and a punch left.
Have you been having a rough day at work today? You've been talking about punching a lot. I don't know if you just need to glut out some aggression.
Yeah, we need to ship this. So a lot better.
Fixing bugs.
Yep. And so we will say, no, we don't need to know the side. So duplicate and mirror data. So this is an interesting one. This one is really helpful when you have a left and right. So when you have a left gesture and you have a bunch of clips that have been tagged with like punch left, and you have the punch right gesture and a bunch of clips that have been tagged with punch right, what it can do is it can take all of the clips for the punch right and it will basically transpose them. Use the mirror data. So transpose the skeleton, use that mirror image, and train the left side. So you end up doubling your data. by doing that. And for this, it says, since my gesture wasn't a left or a right one, I get a different question, which is actually, is this gesture symmetrical? So that is, I don't have a sided gesture, but are both sides of the body doing the same thing or supposed to be doing the same thing? If they are, then you can mirror, which again, actually can double your data. And what happens is, let's say my recording subject happened to have one shoulder higher than the other, just, you know, their body makeup, or one leg slightly longer than the other, so their hips are just a little kilter. Well, when you mirror the data, now the other side is going to have a little slightly higher, and so you automatically train that out of the gesture detector, so it won't look for slightly uneven, okay, you know, body stuff. So that's really helpful. The one case where you wouldn't use it is when you have, let's say, a dance move which requires the full body, but only one arm is up, and it needs to be the left arm that's up or something. So you wouldn't want to mirror that, because if the user ended up being right arm, you don't want it to trigger that gesture. But most cases, mirroring is a great option. So progress. So we'll go a little more into continuous versus discrete gestures. But what this is about is asking you, do you need to create a continuous gesture, which can be used to map to animation, or just even the changes of states of gestures themselves. This particular one, I could create a seated progress gesture, which showed, like, you know, the percent of, like, standing before I get, you know, seated. So I'm like, oh, I'm 10% seated, 100%, yay. I don't really care. So I don't need to track progress in this gesture. I'm not going to do anything animation-wise. So I'm going to say no and move on from there.
So you're kind of, I think as you're explaining this, you're just setting this up to say, is this person seated or not? It's just a very black or white kind of situation. But I would think for maybe like for a workout video or something, if somebody was doing air squats, maybe you actually then would
want their progress, and you want to know, no, you need to go lower. So right in the squat. But for us, it's like, I'm just really doing a true or false. You know, are they seated? Are they not? That's all I care about. Okay. And so it will basically give me one option saying you're creating a seated gesture. The type is a discrete gesture, which is the true false type. And it's going to use the AWS trigger machine learning algorithm in order to train it. It gives a nice little overview of your joint mask, and this actually calls out all of the selections that you'd made before. We're going to go ahead and confirm. It asks you at this point, you could rename it. I would suggest not to, because it can mess up tagging. And we're going to be done. So at this point, we now have two projects within our solution. Now, the crazy thing is you only created one project, right? So why do we have two?
I've wondered that myself many times in VGD. What is this other thing here?
Yeah, that's one of the tripping points initially. So the one that's called .A is actually your analysis project or your testing project. So this one will be the one that you end up training with. All of the clips that you put here will be used for the actual detection of the gesture. Any clips that you put here will be used to test that detector with. It's usually a good idea to split your clips about two-thirds into training and leave a third of them into testing. And what you don't want is to actually have the same clips that you use in training in testing. And a part of that reason is because what you're trying to do is see how good the ML is at detecting a behavior that it hasn't seen. Mm-hmm. Like, how good is it at classifying if a user is seated versus standing when they've never seen that user before?
So let me ask a question here. So why would I do the analysis project instead of, let's just say, I put all my clips in the training set, I build my detector. Why don't I just have like 10 people come by and test it? Like, why would I go through the trouble of putting all those clips in analysis? Like, what does that give me?
Yeah, repeatability, that's a difficult word. So you won't be able to know if you've regressed anything, if you've broken previous behavior. unless you have a nice test bed.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah,
so it's sort of like, I think what you're saying is, we have this set of clips that, this is our set that we always use for testing. And then as we make changes, as we add new clips for training or whatever it may be, we can see, did our recognition percentage change or not on that body of analysis clips?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so in order to start training, we're going to add some clips. And actually, we've got a bunch here in this previous one. So we're going to add both of these. And again, it kind of goes against what I just said, where you should have two-thirds in training and a third in analysis. But we're going to put both into training right now. So I've already gone through and tagged these. What I should do is actually delete them, and we'll go through the tagging process. Let's see, we'll go shift and delete. And now this clip is no longer tagged. Okay, so this is usually the view you get when you first start on a clip. You have a left and a right indicator, so which helps to if you're tagging a left and a right gesture. You have a view of your body and a view of the IR. So the IR is really helpful to tag with, mainly because this view isn't necessarily the best visually. We can, for this particular gesture, I can look at the front view and it's okay. But IR is really critical if you're doing hand state gestures, because you, as you can tell, it's really hard to tell what these hand joints are doing. You can zoom in and out, but you don't know from just the depth if the user's hands are opened or closed.
Yeah.
So it's good to have the IR for those little things. So what I like to do is I like to typically start at the beginning, and I should show you real quick a hidden little thing, which is shouldn't be hidden, but it is, which are these keyboard shortcuts that will cut down tagging time dramatically.
Life-changing.
Yes.
No, I'm speaking from personal experience here. I tagged about 10 clips at an event, and I didn't know about these keyboard shortcuts. And man, once somebody showed me this, it decreased my tagging time by like 5 times
at least. So definitely unveil this until you learn it by heart. You know, I mean, the basic ones are your arrow keys for moving left and right, which should, you know, be right. And the shift, like holding down shift, you can end up basically selecting an entire section. And then a wonderful button is the enter key, which will tag everything as true in an Ada boost or in a discrete gesture. And we're going to delete that. Or we can press the space bar and mark it as false. Now, for me, I actually don't like to mark anything in my clips as false. I only mark true, and I let all other frames be considered false.
So if that's the case, then why do we give people the ability to tag things as false?
So that is the case if you really care about training time and you want to speed up training time. So what happens when you don't tag a frame as false? It will treat all untagged frames as false. That's usually really good, but then every single frame is going to be used in training.
Oh, so
and including all of this like lead-in time where I'm just moving around my desk trying to get the recording started. That's not valid for, you know, what I'm actually trying to train. But because the gesture is not happening and there's nothing like the gesture happening, I'm going to treat it as negative anyway. But
so I'm a little confused. So you're saying if I don't tag it false, then it actually increases my time because there's more frames now throughout the clip that are being analyzed as false.
Yeah.
But if I mark it as false, is it omitted from the analysis then?
Or no. So if you mark it as false, it will use that as a negative training example. So not only do you have to consider like what the positive case is, like this is really what you want your gesture to learn, you have to tell it what you don't want it to learn as well. Again, like if I'm doing seated, let's say I decided that I don't want it to recognize someone is seated if their legs are crossed, then I would need to put that in as a negative training example in order to train out that behavior.
Okay.
It's also a common thing is that if you have an application that has multiple gestures, so if I'm doing my kickboxing gesture, whereas I have both punches and kicks, what I'm going to do is I'm going to use like my punch gesture as a negative training case for my kick gesture, and vice versa. So Basically all the other gestures that are not the one I'm tagging are going to be pulled in as negative samples. And that will help reduce interference in your game and like false positives, false negatives, and help you be a little more accurate, at least for the context that you care about.
Okay.
So here we're just going to treat. So here's a great example of what's actually going to be false. Standing is not seated. I could tag all of the frames that I'm standing as false. Or I could just leave them untagged, which I'm going to do here, and they will all be treated as false. So when you're tagging, especially when you're tagging a dynamic gesture, like one that has motion, what you want to do is you want to find the very first frame where your gesture is true, where it's actually happening. So for me, I have to look really close at where when the hips actually hit the chair and the user can be thought of as seated there. For me, like that's where I would say, here I'm still leaning forward, leaning back. It's okay if you're a few frames off. It depends on your gesture though. If you have a really little gesture that you're training and it's only a few frames that the gesture occurs in because it's really fast and small, then you need to be really accurate. If it's a nice big gesture where I'm gonna have like, you know, 30, 50 frames of all this gesture being true, there's some leniency there.
Okay.
But you do want to try to find an area that you can be consistent about in tagging from clip to clip. And for me, it's like, okay, I'm going to watch the hips. Okay, but is in the chair. So we're going to press shift and arrow key together. And I go single frame. You don't want to hold this down because at any point, you know, I might pop up in this clip. So, and you don't want to miss
you're
that.
You're chilling here.
Yeah,
I am.
So you can hold down the arrow key and it will still go frame by frame. Okay, so it looks like I'm leaning forward. Oh, hips are off the chair. So I'm going to go one frame back until I think the hips are not, which is about there. And I'll press the enter key. And now I have a seated gesture.
Okay. So I saw that blue bar. That blue bar comes up at the top that indicates that's the range of clips where this is true.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So if you have a blue bar at the top, it's true. If you have a blue bar at the bottom, it's false. Or if you just don't have a bar, it's false. So now we're going to go ahead and find our next one, if there is another one. And whoop, there it is. So we're going to back up until we find, again, where hips meet chair, which is just about there. Yeah. Okay, so that's a good spot. And a tag. Oh, here I'm going. So we're going to back up until we find the spot where hips are no longer in the chair. Just right about there. So quickly scrub the file, make sure that there's none other. A good way also, just if you're double checking files, you can hold down the control button and you can use the arrow keys, and this jumps between keyframes. So for discrete gestures, that would be the start and end frames of a gesture. And this is kind of nice because the most mistakes in gesture tagging are at the start and the end of the tag. So you can quickly verify your start. Looks good. Verify your end is what you want. So we're good with this. We'll just go ahead to our next clip. We'll say yes, save it. The next clip's already been tagged, but we can go double check that it's about the same tagging technique. So again, I actually typically watch the one with the skeleton right now and see that the skeleton's doing what I want. That looks good. and the hips are off. And this one I actually think the hips were on just a little earlier. So I'm gonna go ahead and hold down the shift key to the frame that I think, to double check, like there's this little properties pane. So sometimes it's difficult because the frame is so narrow here to tell if it's actually got a value or not. But you can double check up here. It's gonna tell you true or false, or if it doesn't have one, nothing. So we know this one's not tagged. So I'm gonna go ahead and hold shift, and I just like to overlap with some existing ones in case there was any gaps that I might have missed. So this clip is all done. And the next step, is to actually train it. So we're gonna go ahead and build the project. Seated. We're gonna actually use the other folder that I created earlier. Okay.
And you could have put that anywhere, you just, to stay consistent with where you put the other parts, okay.
Yeah, so I like to keep the database next to.
Could you expand that bottom window while this is going? I'd love for you to talk through that.
We'll see if I can grab this. Okay, so in the output window, you're going to be seeing information from the trainer, which is the AdaBoost trainer. And what it starts with is there's, I believe, four different steps. It's gonna have a nice little overview. It's gonna so it's all done almost. This one was fast because there's only the two clips to train from. But what you normally have is just a little overview of the properties that have been set for the algorithm. So these are the things that you set actually when you went through the wizard. You can manually go and change them by going to seeded, and there's a properties window and you can change them there. But by default, they're created by the wizard for you. Basically going over the joint mask you had selected and your hand mask. And then it gives a good list of all of the joints that it's gonna look at during training. So after we get a nice little overview, it starts loading the clips. So here it's gonna load all of our training examples. So for here, it says the number of labeled examples, which is actually like the number of positive frames that I marked, because I don't have any negative. It could include negative, but it's only positive here. And then the ratio of positive to negative was 1 to 1.25. So it basically, it looked at negative, like as each big swath of non was counted as like one negative for this particular one. Which is also why we end up getting 8 gestures. Even though I really had 4 tagged, I had big sections of negatives. So after it loads it up, counts the gestures, now it starts feeding in the examples frame by frame to the trainers. The trainer is going to try to figure out, by comparing all of the tags, which classifiers that it should care about. So it starts for this particular algorithm. It happens.
I think you're just clicking on the right click area there. So just stay to the left.
Good. Okay.
Yeah, it kept prompting you to.
Still. There we go. So here we have, like I said, basically 38 classifiers. There's more than that. We show the top ones, or you can say like these are like all combinations of ones. So you have the hand value raw, but it's going to be combined with velocity. This one's going to be combined with speed. So you end up having a lot of different classifiers, like over 1,000 classifiers generated. And then through that, it tries to find the top 10 classifiers. So, and I should talk about this. So what it does for you is, I had mentioned that you don't really want to test your clips you don't want to, in your test set, use the same clips that you had in your training set. However, it's a really great check to double check that your tagging was correct if you try to test with the same clips. But training will automatically do it for you. So what it's saying is I'm testing on the training data, which means I'm done training, but I want to double check myself and tell you how accurate I think I am against myself.
Uh-huh.
So we got really good accuracy, actually, 100%.
And would you expect to normally get 100?
I've seen, and you should expect to get at least in the 90s, okay. Like high 90s against
itself. So if you're below high 90s, you know something's wrong in your tagging.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Yeah, it's in your tagging or in the clip itself, which we should go, if we have time, go over some bad clips that you want to throw out
and examples
of that.
We should save that for part two.
Yeah. So after we're done, we get this nice little list of classifiers, the top 10 that it found was important. So it looks like if you look through, it really thinks my knee combined with my spine, both of my knees and my spine are important, which kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, you know, my knee joint is suddenly a lot closer to my spine or the angle has changed.
Mm-hmm.
So as you go through, you're like, okay, those make sense. As you add more clips and stuff, you might actually find some of these moving up in the order or a new one appearing. These are good to look at, especially if you really do want to pursue the heuristic route of coding your own gesture. It's still great to prototype with VGB because it can tell you what the important things are.
Oh, so you're saying if I prototype with VGB, I would say, wow, I need to look at these 10 things in code if I go down that path.
Yeah.
That's kind of an interesting shortcut.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I could see if you went down the coding path to begin with, you might
miss a lot of
the characteristics that were, you know, really pertinent to that gesture.
Yeah, and that's the thing is sometimes you don't want to cut your joints down too far because you might be missing something that's really subtle. Like, let's say in a punch, you could just look for, you know, the hand moving forward, but you really need to pay attention to, you know, its relationship with the shoulder or maybe how the shoulder to the neck joint kind of moves forward as well.
And what about the speed too?
Yeah, speed and velocity.
Because if you're really like slow punch, you're like, well, is that really a punch or was it just a closed fist push?
Yeah, so that will depend on your actual situation. So with VGB, you might want to ignore speed. And to do that, what you would do is you would train, like you would have a clip of a really slow punch, and you'd have a clip of a really fast punch. And then it would learn to ignore speed.
Oh, okay.
So if you don't want speed and velocity to be a factor, you know, you train them out. But yeah, if you're doing heuristics, now you need to come up with some algorithm
right.
If it's within the speed range.
Or, wow.
Yeah, so it tells you how fast it took. Again, as you get larger and larger databases, you know, gesture clips, it actually can take a long time to train. So
okay.
Two clips, pretty fast.
So
100 clips overnight.
I think we're starting to get long on time here, or maybe I should say short on time remaining. So how do we now sort of test this, and then how, once I kind of get my database file, how would I start to incorporate that into my application?
Yeah, so there's two ways to test. I guess we'll start with the analysis one. Now, I don't think I have another clip to add, so we're actually going to be bad and add an existing clip. Let's see.
You're clicking on the right.
Oh, God.
Just click over here more. It's very subtle.
Yeah, surface. All right, so we're going to go seated. And we're just going to add our first clip, even though I told you not to. But what you do to analyze your test set, so again, now we've got one clip in here. You just right-click, and you say Analyze. And you select the gesture database that you want to analyze against.
Okay.
So this is the one that we just created. I'm saying go ahead and run against it. It comes out. And it gives you a nice little overview. This is the all up. So if I had multiple clips, this would be the overall results for all clips in the test bed. It's going to tell you the main ones you actually want to pay attention to are these ones. False positives and false negatives.
Mm-hmm.
This is really great. We didn't have any false positives, didn't have any false negatives. Again, that was expected because this is a clip it already knows. It's trained on it.
Mm-hmm.
Average RMS is actually the difference. So again, if we click on the actual clip, then we get even we get different data. So here, this green bar indicates what was what the analysis, what the detector thought was the gesture.
Oh.
So we see just a little lag in the end, and that's really common. So a gesture, a lot of times it'll actually, it won't detect until a little after you've tagged it, and will detect a little longer. So there's just, so being able to try to narrow that field until you're really close to your actual tag is a good goal. This is actually pretty good. We're getting it right at the same time and just have a little bit of lag. So in order to shorten that, we just pretty much add a few more clips of us doing the gesture and see if we can do it. We also could go back and look at the clip itself and try to see if, you know, if this is unreasonable behavior, because really the hips are still pretty close to the chair. I would say this one is bad. Like, I'm almost standing in that clip, so I don't like that behavior.
Yeah.
But as we go frame by frame, you'll see the confidence value as well. So it's confident, but the confidence suddenly dropped. So all through here, it was 100% confident that the gesture was occurring. But as soon as we actually move out of our tagged area, confidence is lower.
Right.
So in your game or in your application, if you really wanted to, you know, train that out or only fire, you know, only trigger a behavior in your game, if the gesture was 90% confident, you could do that. You get access to the confidence value within the title, so, or within the APIs. So you could do that if you wanted to.
Okay. So maybe we could show the live preview.
Yeah, so for that I need to unplug this.
Plug the sensor in.
Yeah, plug the sensor in.
Now are we gonna have to reposition the Kinect so it can see me over here more?
We could. We'll see what we do. In order to run live preview, so this is a little application that you can load your database with and test it out very quickly. You go to File, select Live Preview, select your database that you just built, and open it up. And this is going to talk to the camera here. Okay. Now it can see Ben. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of space, so it probably won't detect if it's seated. We see a little bit of bars happening. It's not really confident, though. So, yeah, like, because it can't see his legs.
Well, here, let's see if we reposition the Kinect here.
Yeah, and get us.
And I don't have an actual chair, so do an air squat.
Okay, it can see you. Okay. So go ahead and try sitting. Oh, still not detecting you.
Turns out you might need a chair.
Yeah, might need a chair for that.
One more try with the stool here.
Yeah. Oh, there we go.
100%.
100% confident.
Well, then it drops a little bit.
It drops a little as you move around.
That's really cool.
Or some joints happen. So, yeah, with two clips, we got, you know, an extremely high confidence. That, you know, I don't want to lead, you know, viewers astray. That's not common. You know, usually you get maybe 50 or 30% confidence your first few takes.
Yeah.
100% is really rare, but this was an easy gesture, and you'll find a lot of them out there. There are a lot of big, easy gestures to train. Typically, the bigger the gesture, the easier it is to train.
Mm-hmm.
The smaller the gesture, you know, the more accurate you have to be with tagging, the more clips you're going to need, and it's a lot harder.
But. Okay, cool.
All right.
So let's jump back over to the slides, and I guess we didn't talk yet about the... Well, let's run through this real quick and see, did we leave anything out?
Yeah, make sure we did this all. Okay, so you tag gestures, true or false, to let the trainer know what it's supposed to be looking at. We use different machine learning technologies. So for discrete gestures, which was your true or false gestures, which is the one we just tagged, we use Ada Boost Trigger for training. There are other ML technologies out there for this type of stuff, but this is the one we landed on. Oops. For continuous gestures, we use random forest regression, which we'll demonstrate in part two of this series. But that's more complex. About 90% of gestures created are usually discrete gestures. So it's rare when you need continuous, but there are needs for it, and we'll talk about it later. And then we went over analyzing your gestures and then testing them with live preview. with real world subjects. So, all right.
So then this slide builds up, which is just kind of an overview. So if you just
recorded examples,
yeah.
We tagged the gestures, we built them and then analyzed them in VGB, and we previewed them in Visual Gesture Builder. And yes, creating gestures is an iterative process. You need to do it lots and lots over and over and over and really build that up. Like I said, it's chasing that long tail. So we got, you know, really high percentage right off the bat. But the next step would be for us to start trying this with other people, making sure it works when the sensor is higher, lower. You know, when you were standing doing an air squat, it's like, oh, does the chair matter? Do I need to take the chair out of the picture? Do I need higher or lower chairs to
right.
do it? So going back and forth, like you don't want to go and say, I'm going to record 100 people doing the same gesture. You want to actually do recording batches smaller and train them and analyze them and then figure out what the next step is that
right.
you need
yeah,
to
that
do.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you might go down this path of investment and it turns out it was just wrong.
Well, or it's like, okay, you might be training the algorithm to recognize stuff it already knows,
mm-hmm.
which is just a waste.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you need to find out what it doesn't know and then teach it. All right. So, yes. So our
then
last and final step.
You get your database file and use it in your application.
Is the application. And I think if we go to Connect SDK browser, we actually have a sample in the browser that shows how to do gesture detection within an application. So if we go to the discrete gesture basics, sorry, we can install this.
And just put it on the desktop, that's
all
fine.
Right.
I've got plenty of things to clean up on the desktop as it is.
That's your desktop. All right, now we have to find it again. And here we go. And this we can load up in Visual Studio.
Okay, so then what's the...
We've
got all the code here, right, that we're going to be able to look at?
Yes.
Do you want to run this first and show people how it works?
Yeah, we can. Where's my actual...
You can just start it right there.
We'll run him.
I have my layout different than...
Yeah, totally. Okay, so go ahead and pop in front of the screen, Ben. So what this program does is it actually has the ability to track 6 different players at the same time. So Ben will stand
up, sit
down.
So you're not seeing my legs because I'm kind of hidden behind
yeah.
the...
So this actually uses the seated gesture database. So it is saying that he's seated. As he stands up, it's going to knock out. Unfortunately, the view thinks his legs are still in the air, but...
Here, I'll move the sensor a little bit so it can see me a little bit better here.
And I probably should move this just a little. Okay, so he's not seated. So we get an icon over here. He's not seated. Confidence doesn't really apply. But as you saw, while he was sitting down, that confidence value is changing. So when he's totally seated, and if his legs end up actually, going the right direction, we'll get to a confidence of 1. So it knows it's seated. Up and down. Now, if you were to walk out of view of the sensor, all right, we get an event that says you're not tracked anymore. It updates the visual. Now, if he walks back in, he might get a different tracking ID, and so he has a different skeleton.
I'm pink now.
Yeah, it's a pretty color for you. So he sits up and down. So that's pretty much the basics. This is, an easy way to do pretty much any discrete gesture, which again is about 90% of the gestures out there. So this particular sample, if we dive into the code, where's my solution?
Go over here.
Explorer.
And then I think all the code here is in this gesture detector, right?
A note. So there's 2. We'll look at mainwindow.xaml.cs.
Okay.
And then the gesture detector.
And gesture detector.
Yeah.
So what I'm assuming that in main window, we're basically Are we using multi-source frame reader in this sample?
So we're using eventing, and I mean, it's C#. So in the underlaying, yes, it's a multi-frame source reader. But I don't use it directly. What I use is the body frame reader.
Okay.
So in main window, you're going to have the body frame reader, and you're going to be listening to the events for that. Let's see if we can find it. I think it's at the bottom of this page. So this is just building our main window and our visuals. But here is the event that you care about. So so in order to track bodies, you're going to listen to this body frame arrived. Okay. And you're going to try to find which bodies are valid, which are not. It's pretty important to know when you lose a tracking ID or when a new tracking ID comes in that you need to update. Again, this sample tracks all 6 players, so you need to be watching and monitoring for when a new body comes in mm-hmm. or out. If you were to, say, only track 1 player, well, you would still need to be watching for all 6, but you would do some calculation of, like, find the closest skeleton or track a single user with their identity tied to it or something. But
okay.
But this one cares about all 6. So the basics of your body frame is you're going to create an array of bodies. Again, the max body frame for connect is 6. So which is what this dot body count is going to give you. So we'll create an array of 6 bodies. Those 6 bodies will all be initialized with this call, and they won't be turned back to null unless you actually set it null. Then you would totally lose tracking of that body item. But so you don't want to do that. You want to use this command to just get and refresh the body data whenever you get a new body frame arrived event from the sensor.
Okay.
So if we got one, then we need to go here. Now this is the part that's going to work with our gesture detector, which we're going to go into in a little bit, is each body is going to have a gesture detector associated with it. So if both you and I were in range of that sensor, there would be 2 detectors running. When you're just in range, there's actually only 1 detector running, and it's only watching your body, and it's watching to see if you sit and stand. So it's really a one-to-one mapping. So why you need to update the detector within the body frame is that it's the body frame that knows when it's valid or not. The detector doesn't. You need to tell the detector when your body frame changes. So we do that here. Basically, if your tracking ID is changed, then you're going to update your detector item that's associated with that tracking ID.
Mm.
There's a nice little option with the gesture detection APIs in that you can pause the detector. So or unpause it as well. But so if a user isn't being tracked, then there's really no need to waste that resources trying to run all those classifiers on a non-existent body. So what we do is we just pause the detector if the tracking ID is 0, which is when the tracking ID is invalid. Then the main bulk of the code, so that's the special interaction. You do really have to update that tracking ID within the body frame event.
Okay.
The rest of our code.
There's a gesture. Is it in gesture detector?
Yep, it's in gesture detector. So gesture detector is just a class which kind of utilizes our VGB APIs, which here is you get from the connect.visualgesturebuilder. Again, we're using C#. There are different libraries that you're going to pull from if you're doing WinRT. So as we go down, I'm pulling from my database. So when you create a new project, you are going to add your database as a content item,
mm-hmm.
and you say copy always. So you're going to change that in your properties so that the database will be packaged up with your application.
Okay.
And then you can just use a relative path like I'm doing here to pull in the database. For me, I want to pull a particular gesture from that database. So I want to pull the seated gesture out of that database. So I name it. And the name does need to match the name of the gesture in your database. You want to create a frame source object and a frame reader object. And we'll go into initializing those in a minute. So when you create your frame source, you're going to pass it your connect sensor, which should be connected. And then zero, which is actually the invalid tracking ID. Mm-hmm. So again, like I was saying, you want to associate your detector with a body. And in this case, is actually the frame source within the detector that has the body information and stores that. So we'll initialize it to zero, and we're going to, there is a new option where you can listen to a tracking ID lost event. Mm-hmm. And if it's lost, then you can either pause the detector or you can change your UI. I think I changed my UI to the not tracked image in that event. And then I leave pause and unpause within the body frame event. But you can do different things within this event if you want. But I'm subscribing to it on the source object because it's the source object that has the tracking ID lost that needs to be monitored. So then you create a reader. For our VGB frames. And what I do is I initially pause the reader because I've set the tracking ID to zero, so I don't need it to be firing VGB frame arrived events until I actually unpause them. So until I get a valid tracking ID, I don't want these events to be fired. So I actually pause the detector when I first create the reader. And then you want to subscribe to your gesture frame arrived event. So as we go here, what I'm doing is I'm opening the database with this command, and then I'm going to load all of the gestures that I want. So here I mentioned in code that you could just use add gestures and it would add all of their gestures in the database, which could be done for this particular database because it only had one gesture. But let's say I have a database that I'm using from someone else. Like somebody else created this library of gestures and I really only want like three of those gestures. Well, I can go in here and say load database, but only load the three gestures that I'm interested in. So here we're loading it by name and we're adding it to our source object. The source object, again, is the one that's going to be listening for these gestures and associated with a particular body. So we're going to go down. We've got, this is actually just a helper guy for the UI. He handles updating the UI for me for when the user changes from seated to not. So these are our properties that we need to be watching for. Again, tracking ID, which happens to be the VGB frame sources tracking ID. The pause state, which is the pause state of the reader. So so our frame arrived events are going to be paused or unpaused. And that, again, both of those were updated from the body arrived event in the other class. So
just some kind of some basic scaffolding here that we need to put in place.
Yeah, you want to implement a disposable dispose because the frame reader and the frame source are idisposable, so you need to make sure to clean them up when you're done with them. Now comes the bulk of our real work. So this is our event for listening to when a gesture builder frame arrived event occurs. So again, the frame arrived event will only occur when the detector is not paused. And if you happen to forget to pause and pause it, it's okay, but you'll need to double check that you get a valid frame. Because what'll happen is if the tracking ID becomes invalid, then the data that you're gonna be getting for that user will be invalid within the frame. And typically what'll happen is you'll get a result, but it'll be an empty result. So you just won't do anything with it. For me, I like to pause it just again so I don't waste resources and know exactly when it's running and not running, and I can control it better with the pause stuff. But you can go through here. You basically, what you're gonna do is you're gonna get your frame. They have two different types. Again, we have of results. So you have the discrete gestures, which is what the seated gesture is, and you have the continuous gesture. And you need to know what type you're getting. If I wanted both, I would just create another dictionary that grabbed the continuous gestures, and you can put them all in, you know, a separate list. But the why they're different instead of one big class is because what they return is different. So again, like a discrete gesture will return a Boolean value, like true, I'm happening, you know, or false, I'm not happening. It will also return a float value, which is the confidence of that gesture happening.
Right.
Whereas the continuous gesture will also return a float, but it doesn't mean confidence. It means that this is my progress value. This is how far I am in the gesture.
And it's between 0 and 1?
Typically, you can actually override that in the VGB tool yourself. If you end up setting a tag to 4, it'll be, you know, 4.
So I could have a gesture that goes to 11.
Yeah. like some people, like they might want to, for like negative cases and continuous gestures, be like, oh, like anything that's not really my gesture, I'm going to give a value of like, you know, -1 or something. But I mean, usually, ideally, you want something that you really maps to progress values. 0 to 1 works great for, you know, 0 to 100%.
Yeah.
And so that's what we try to stick to.
All right.
But yep, so we go through, we grab every gesture that the source knows about, which was in this case just the seated gesture. I do a double check just to make sure. So if I ever were to swap out the database and it had more than one database, I want to make sure that I'm grabbing the particular gesture I care about, and that the one it knows about is the type that you know I'm mapping to. And that's also if you just like copy and paste the code somewhere else, you know, you
like
need to know that it's the right
suspenders.
The type.
Yeah.
Yeah, just double checking. I mean, this stuff should have been, you know, it was handled up earlier, but we get our result value. So we're going to try to get the value for the particular gesture that we created up here.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we have the gesture, basically we know there was a result. So what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and we're going to update the viewer object. So that was my UI helper guy.
And this is just specific to your app.
Yeah.
Somebody could do app even and not have the UI. And,
exactly.
Yeah.
So this is, I mean, these are the two main points, again, that you get from the discrete gesture, is that you get the detected property and the confidence value. So, and then, yeah, if we were to go to my gesture result view, you'd see that I don't really do anything with confidence. I just switch out the image based on if I'm detected or not.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think I mentioned earlier, like with the seated, if we really wanted to remove that part where it thought I was sitting, but the confidence had dropped to like 80, I could do it here. I could double check that confidence value and say only update to seated if it's 100%.
Default for us for detected is 50% and above. Is that what the defaults are?
So the defaults are controlled in your properties settings within your solution file. So I don't know what we built this particular one with.
Okay.
But yeah, you can change those values. And
but I can
like,
always.
I always want to hire. Yeah.
But you're saying here,
you can override
even
it in
if
your
my
code.
Project said, hey, 50% and above is true, I can override it here by looking at the confidence.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So you have
well, more hey,
control.
I think we should wrap up.
Good. I think we're all done.
And yeah, I think we are. Well, let's just take a look here. So we did our demo, adding and tagging clips. We talked about compiling the database and using it in your app. I did want to just share some resources here with anybody out there who's not familiar. We've got a VGB white paper, which has a lot more of the best practices and kind of mm-hmm. things to consider. I know you talked to a lot of them today.
It's a must read, though. Yeah.
Yeah. So we created the short URL there, ak.ms/k4wv2vgb. We've got connectforwindows.com for all of our general info. That's where you can find our blog. You can purchase a sensor in 23 countries now. So you can go to that link to find the place to do that. We also have our preview SDK, developer forums that are very active. Lots of people coming in there. We've got Connect4Windows MVPs as well as engineers from our team there helping people get answers. We've got some Twitter handles, our team at ConnectWindows, at Ben Lauer, at A. Hillier. And then we have an upcoming hackathon event in Amsterdam, September 5th. So if you are in Europe or you're wanting a trip to Amsterdam, you want a good excuse to go over there, check us out at K4WHackAMS. Again, that's an AK.MS link. And hopefully we'll see you there. So I think that's going to conclude part one. Yeah. And hopefully you'll stick around and join us again for part two. So thanks a lot, Angela, for taking the time and sharing your expertise on
Hope
VGV.
It helps.
Yeah, I learned a ton just sitting here and watching you go through things. So thanks again. Mm-hmm.